Hey guys, and welcome to another episode of Mostly Peaceful Latinas. I'm your host, Bella.
And I'm Linda.
And before we get started, please guys, don't forget, show us some support, share, like, and subscribe to our channel. Help us get on the algorithm and like this video, comment. See you guys in the chat.
Hey guys, another week in the clown world. and we have a very special guest today, but before we get started, this show is sponsored by Sentry H2O. Sentry H2O is a water filtration system made by patriots in Arizona. So if you don't want to turn gay like the frogs, if you don't want fluoride and have a calcified pineal gland, and you're looking for an affordable system, easy to install, check out Sentry H2O. It's under $300. And with our code MPL10, you get 10% off. Also, like we told you last week, Sentry and Nelson, that's the owner and founder, they're actually going to East Palestine, Ohio, giving water filtration systems to the people there because they have been abandoned by the Biden administration. So if you can't afford the system, you can also donate on their website. We have it in the link in bio. And yeah, that's pretty much it.
Thank you, Nelson.
Thank you, Nelson.
You're doing out there. And we should have an update on that. Speaking on Nelson, we should have an update soon. Remember that Sentry is doing independent studies of the water out in Ohio. So we should have some results on those independent studies soon. So we'll know exactly what it is that the government is lying to us about.
Absolutely.
No Illuminati, no lizard people. So without further ado, guys, we want to welcome you to our guest,
Sterling Cooper. Sorry. So our guest today, I met him a few weeks ago when I was doing a podcast with Valuetainment. He's a very interesting character, online personality. So without further ado, Sterling, please introduce yourself to our guest.
Thank you. You know what? In that 20-second introduction you just gave, talking about like water filters and stuff, mm-hmm. I realized we have so much more in common than I even thought we did.
Oh, of course.
Like filtered water all the way. I love it.
Absolutely. The Red Pill community all comes together at one point. There's like a point where we all meet.
You guys are based. I love it.
Yeah.
So for anyone who doesn't know who I am, I'm a bit of an odd character, especially considering I'm on a conservative podcast right now. Might be if you want to throw hate and shade, throw it at me. Don't throw it at these lovely ladies. So I am a retired adult film star. I was in that industry for about 5 years, shooting all over the world. I shot in Australia, in England, in Prague, in Budapest, and then mostly in Los Angeles. And that's how I made my way to America. But I have turned over a new leaf. I am now doing God's work in the form of helping the average man become better in the bedroom. I help men overcome any kind of bedroom performance issues they might have, like erectile dysfunction, premature ejaculation, these kind of things. Mm-hmm. And I help them be better lovers for their wives and girlfriends, basically.
Which is very needed, if I may say. Not that I know.
Not that I personally know.
But no, seriously, I like on the radio, I don't listen to the radio a lot, but I swear to God, every time I turn on the radio and I'm off Spotify, I always hear commercials about ED. And like the rates are insane. It's like 50% of men suffer from erectile dysfunction after the age of 35. And, and then they advertise like a product or whatever it is, or clinics that they're helping men out. So it's like a big deal.
You know, what's almost ironic about what it is that you're doing that, studies show that porn can really mess up the way that men look at sexual intercourse relationships. And it seems like you're kind of now taking this route where this problem that porn has a lot to do with this new wave, I guess, of men, if you will, that have a hard time performing. And it's because of these false expectations that are set by pornography. And now there's kind of like a shift where you're helping these very people where maybe your other content was contrary to that.
Yeah. And it's in a weird situation I found myself in where I'm like reflecting back on, my career and what I did. And people asking me, do you ever regret it? And I honestly have to say, no, I can't regret it because it led me to this situation I'm in now. Right. Like I wouldn't be in the position to help men the way I can if I hadn't have gone through that career. Cause it's a very physically demanding career as a man. Not every guy can do it. It requires a lot of performing under pressure, we should say.
And so, all eyes on you, right?
Yeah like a whole room full of eyes on you basically. And paychecks dependent upon your ability to perform. So, but because of that high stress scenario, well, now if a guy comes to me and he's like, oh, I'm a bit nervous because it's my first date with this pretty young Cuban girl or whatever, right. I'm like, relax. I can help you. Like there's right. that is like a 1 out of 10 compared to like the experiences I've gone through.
Right.
So I can help the average man get over those kind of bedroom nerves. I can help them understand why porn use and things like diet and lifestyle factors are contributing to them not being able to perform mm-hmm. in the bedroom. That's a big one. Yeah, the standard American diet is not really helping guys either. But definitely, I wasn't really aware of how negatively impactful pornography use was for men's like sexual performance and sexual health until I started kind of diving into this stuff and teaching research. Guys. Yeah. And it's become really, really eye-opening seeing how many young men are basically addicted to pornography these days.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of different factors that have contributed to that. One of those factors is the dating marketplace that men currently, young men especially, currently find themselves in. It's heavily skewed towards, you know, ultra successful men. Mm-hmm. And the average guy doesn't really get any attention from women. Boxes, right? So what's their alternative? Well, men still have sex drives, and a lot of them will turn to pornography as a substitute. Right. I'm not saying that's the right thing to do, but that's why they're turning to that in the first place.
Can you tell us a little bit about kind of like your introduction to the industry? I mean, you're a regular guy. What kind of transitions your life into this very taboo industry, if you will?
Well, I was actually in my early mid-20s, I got into the swinging scene back in Australia, oddly enough, as a single guy. I was, you know, kind of like what they would call a bull in that scene, and I got invited to parties by pretty young ladies and things, and then there were some women there who dabbled in the industry, and they said I would be very good at it. They recommended I'd give it a try, and so I thought, why not? I'll give it a crack, and I was good enough at it to make a job out of it. Yeah, and then I just pursued that. I mean, I'm not going to lie, purely for degenerate reasons.
Right.
Just to be honest. And then that took me all over the world. I was able to travel with that career as well. Yeah, get to go to all the different places, experience all different things. And I actually really enjoy the acting side of that job, oddly enough.
Was that your favorite part?
People might not believe that, but I genuinely love acting. Yeah. So that was kind of the thing for me. I always liked playing like a doctor or a lawyer or a teacher
police.
Or whatever.
Whatever. Dirty cop.
I played everything. So I enjoyed that kind of artistic, creative side of it as well. But then obviously, you know, it's not a boring job either.
So, okay. What about, how did you get into the swinging? Is it just like, you just wanted to have sex with different people, like sexual desires, or was it porn that got you to that mindset that you wanted, you had like this sexual, I don't know, craving for, you know, more.
Oh, you mean like consuming porn as a
man? Because you said you got into porn when you got into the swinging scene, and then people are like, you know what, you'd be good at this. I tend to believe it. And I think now I didn't really understand how dangerous porn was until I just started getting bombarded with like different type of content. And I was like, holy shit, like it makes sense. Right. But I think there's a correlation between having these type of fantasies or more sexual appetite, or even diving into like, you know, lesbian porn or, you know, same-sex porn, or even you get further with the transgenders and stuff, because, and it all stems from porn. So was it porn that got you into the swinging, or was it just like...
Were you a consumer before?
It's a good question. Yeah, I was definitely a consumer as a young man, as like a teenage boy and stuff. And you know what? There was my first... if I'm thinking about it really hard, my first ever exposure to pornography was on my brother's computer, my older brother's computer, and it was like hentai anime, Japanese anime porn,
okay.
which I found on his computer. And I was like, what is this stuff? And you know what I found after being in the porn industry? I would obviously talk to other actors and actresses and you know, learn about their kind of exposure to adult content as a teenager. And you'd be surprised how common that is, that people in the porn industry were consuming something like hentai as teenagers.
That's actually interesting, because I saw you were talking about AI taking over the industry on your page. I was kind of going through some of your content, and the thought of that is actually very terrifying. You know, one of the things that we clearly look into a lot, a topic that we talk about a lot, is human trafficking. And it seems to me like we're stepping into dangerous play where now the adult industry is stepping more into this AI, like so many other industries, AI-led content, if you will. Doesn't that kind of open the door for anything goes? Like, isn't it going to lead to potentially open up like a completely different door of status of what's acceptable as far as degeneracy goes? Because now you can have AI
that makes
a female look significantly younger than maybe what would have been legal of a porn star. Is that stepping into a dangerous category where it's going, or sexuality in itself through the porn industry now being led through AI could lead to an even more screwed up place than where it's
technically you can already go there with things like anime hentai, mm-hmm. like that particular genre of Japanese animation, or with cartoons or whatever. That kind of stuff still that already exists. Mm-hmm. My opinion on the AI stuff right now is that I actually think it is a good thing, because then people won't, like, you, the average pretty woman, like, as beautiful as you are, you're not going to be able to compete with an AI generated woman, right. Mm-hmm. Who's going to do everything the consumer wants. She's going to look exactly how he wants her to look. She's going to say exactly what he wants her to say, right? She's going to have all the interests that he wants her to have. Like, she's into baseball cards or whatever the hell. You can't compete with that as a real woman. Right. So what does that mean? It means that is no longer a career choice for women. OnlyFans will disappear. Isn't like real women doing OnlyFans will slowly get outcompeted by AI. Yeah. People who were in my previous profession will get outcompeted by AI too. So that means that industry is no longer going to be a viable career option, really, for most people. So I think that's where it's going to end up, because you could, in the argument you're making, they could use it to generate like more degenerate things. Mm-hmm. But I think that is already being done.
Like that's already something.
I think that's already being done with cartoons.
It's my understanding that with a lot of these like anime cartoons, like usually the characters are exceptionally young. Like they'll have
like the waifu stuff. They're made to look young. Yeah.
Like teen porn, right?
Yeah, I mean, even some of the, like, I've seen some of these like anime characters are supposed to represent like teenage girls and like really young teenage girls, like 12, 13, 14 years old, right? Yeah. So it just does it open up the door where this is already a conversation that's taking place, because there are people that are dependent on a lot of pedophiles that are dependent on this kind of like anime type of porn that's out there in order to satisfy their fantasies. And then to me, it's like, You got a kid. The average age for a man to start consuming porn is at the age of 13 to 14. So about 13 and a half years old.
And that's now.
Yeah.
Like, I think if I'm being honest, I probably consumed it about that age when I was a kid as well.
Yeah.
But for us, it was like, I remember we had the local like a tip, mm-hmm. the dump. What do you guys call it here in America? Is that what you call it? A dump?
Yeah.
Yeah. Where the news agency would dump all the nudie mags that they didn't sell. And me and my friends, we'd go down there and we knew where a big pile of them was, and we all grabbed one and we took it home. Yeah. And that was like the fapping material for like 6 years. That was the source. Yeah.
But that was it. That was the source. It was very different back then.
Totally different. But the point of that story is that like an entire generation or two generations ago as well, like the last two generations didn't have the problem that young men have now, where it's just constant, instant access to anything they can possibly think of. Mm-hmm. And that, like you were mentioning before, leads you down that rabbit hole of like, well, this is no longer novel. Yeah. So it has to ratchet up again and again and again to more degenerate, more extreme stuff again and again and again. And that is the rabbit hole it tends to go down.
Right. So real quick before we go on, I just want to give a shout out to our super chat. So Jeremiah Batista, thank you so much for your contribution. Hablando como los locos, let's go. Thank you for your hard work. Thank you, ladies, for being here with us. They try to come every single show.
I love our friends. Remember, guys, saludos. If you have Spanish-speaking, if you're looking for Spanish-speaking content similar to ours, Hablando como los locos, two local podcasters here in South Florida providing content in Spanish.
Also, our boy Anthony, and he says, we need to ban all porn in America. No exceptions. Chad, Mexican dad. He wants no porn in the U.S. We got Adam always hooking us up. Adam, thank you so much. I was actually reading your book this morning, your little prayer book.
Oh, I was reading it just the other day, too. Yeah,
I was reading
Adam, thank you.
Honestly.
With a little highlighter in hand, actually.
Yeah, like that book is incredible. So Thank you so much, Adam. He says this episode is going to be epic. Thank you for steering. Thank you, Sterling, for your insight. As always, ladies, so proud of your support and what you do. And then a donation from Oscar Almonte. Awesome show thus far. As always, ladies, thank you for your continuous repelling and spreading the truth. Thank you.
Thank you,
for
Oscar.
Being here today. And Emily, she says, my friend and I are fans of you girls. We're Latinas from the Ciudad. La ciudad que progresa. That means Hialeah, for those of you who don't know.
For those of you who live in Miami Lakes.
does that translate to the city of progress?
Yes. So thank you guys for being here, for your support. Helps us pay for our podcast and our studio time and Angel, and then just continue our show.
Yeah, guys, don't forget, like the podcast, get us on the algorithm. We can get some more people watching the show.
So
can I quickly touch on one of the comments
that
you guys made? We're like, banning all porn in America, right? Oh. It's like, we're in the situation now where like the cat's out of the bag.
Right.
Like there, if you look, you can look at graphs, right, of rates of erectile dysfunction in men under the age of 30. Mm-hmm. over the last like 20 years, 30 years, yeah. Right? And it's just like, it's just flat line. And then right about like the, just before like 2010, like the late 2000s, mm-hmm. 2008, I can't remember the exact year, 2008, 2009, bang, there's this huge spike and it just goes up from there. And guess what happened around that exact year? You had RedTube, Pornhub. These websites started mm-hmm, to explode. Right. They came online and they started to explode in popularity.
Right.
You can say, okay, it's correlation, not causation, but it's pretty clear that this is the causation of why you're seeing this skyrocketing rates of erectile dysfunction. So now men have access to all this free content. Prior to that, the adult industry was literally like DVDs.
Right.
You'd have to go into videotapes, DVDs. Yeah. You'd have to go into like a sex shop and sheepishly look through like the selection, pick something out and buy it and take it home. Right. And that is, I think that's fun. And more importantly, that was age restricted.
Yeah, 16-year-old kid can't do that. They used to have like a door you used to have to go in. You had to be 18 or older. Yeah.
But you could, like a kid under the age of 18 could not consume that content because he couldn't get access to it. So it actually worked in that way. And I think like, do I think there's a place for pornography anywhere? If there is a place for pornography at all, I think it's actually in relationships. Like just maybe spice things up between a couple. Like you might want to go watch a DVD together. Fine, cool. I don't think that actually hurts anybody. I think pornography is especially harmful to single men. And then in some cases, guys can get into long-term relationships and they have that addictive habit they've dragged into that relationship. It can lead to some rather unwanted then,
there's
relationship.
There's this one movie. I'm trying to remember what the name of the movie was, but the entire movie is, Jeremy Gordon, love it, whatever. But point of the matter is that the entire movie is he has like a porn addiction, a masturbation addiction.
Oh, what's it called? Is it Nymphomaniac or something like that?
No, I don't think it was that. I'm trying to remember what it was.
I know the movie you're talking about.
But he basically has, and what it is that it's almost like he's become so consumed with watching porn and how easy it is to just kind of like, all right, well, I both said I'm done and I can move on, as opposed to the effort that it would take for him to actually engage in sexual relationships with his girlfriend. So it's, you know, I'd argue, and I mean, I'm no expert, but I'd argue that it's definitely even harmful in relationships. Because you see testimonies all the time of men.
I was about to go there.
Marriages that say like, porn ruined my life. Like my husband was spending more time looking at pornography than he was trying to engage in sexual relationships.
I'm going to make a very controversial statement here. I think pornography keeps more Christian relationships together than it breaks up. Because of like a lack of intimacy and sexual passion on the women's half in that relationship. With like dead bedrooms are a problem in a relationship.
Yeah.
And if the wife ain't putting out, what's he gonna do?
So I have three stories to share that will contradict that.
Cool. The first one doesn't contradict that.
So I have somebody I know, she's married now, she's on her second child, and she had a lesbian phase, right? And she blames the lesbian phase on porn. She says that she started fantasizing about women after watching like same-sex like girl on girl porn. Huh. And then, so that was like her whole thing. She's like, I stopped watching porn. You know, I turned to God, like this whole thing. Now she's married. She has two kids. But that's like a testimony that she always talks about in her content. There's another, a very famous pro-life activist. Her name is Elizabeth. Forgot her last name, but she has like 10 children. She's a very famous pro-life activist. This like shocked me. This was like 3 years ago. I remember right before COVID, she announces how she's divorcing her husband. And these are like super trad Christians. Like that's why they have 10 kids. So they don't believe in contraception, none of that. And she blames the breakage of the marriage and the problems on two things. Pornography, the guy was addicted to porn. Mm. And the other one was like, he was a serial cheater, right? So I was in shock because this looked like the perfect little Christian, like, right. Yeah. Couple on the internet with the 10 children and the whole thing. And then the last example is actually like a personal friend of mine who I recently reconnected with, and this person was sharing how their relationship also was messed up and they broke up because of porn, because her man had a porn problem, was addicted to porn. It's not like she's not a conservative Christian, like type of like, I'm not putting out or whatever. So I'm like, seriously? And she's like, yeah, seriously. Like it was a big deal to the point where like, you know, we couldn't engage and all these things. And then we ended up just breaking up. And I was like, holy crap. Like that just happened to me a few days ago. So yeah.
So there's something interesting there with those last two examples you gave, mm-hmm. right? I can only imagine, obviously I'm this is guessing here, right? Because I don't know these people. Right. I don't know these people. I don't know their particular circumstances, right? But that last example, right? I could imagine that man turned to pornography, and this is kind of what I was the point I was making with my original statement, right. Where I think that pornography has actually kept more like Christian relationships together than it's broken up. That man probably turned to pornography because, and the same with the other guy, actually, both of them,
yeah.
Because he had an unquenchable desire to sleep with a different woman other than okay. his wife. And so, what is he going to do? He doesn't want to be unfaithful to his wife, he wants to stay faithful to his wife. So, what does he do instead? He watches pornography. So am I saying that's the correct thing to do? No, I'm just saying I think that would be the cause, is him feeling like that guilt and that shame about wanting variety as a man, which I fundamentally believe all men have. I think that's innate to men biologically. Men like variety in women.
Is it more about the conquest, you think, like just men wanting to you know, be winners and go out there in the chase, the hunt. And it's you've trapped one woman and you want to trap other ones,
doesn't mean you can't still love your wife and your girlfriend.
Right.
I think I don't necessarily see it as like a conquest thing, really. I just, because I know I'm like this. I know that I have not been able to be monogamous to any of my girlfriends for 20 odd years. And I realized that pretty early on. I identified that pretty early on within myself. And I have numerous friends who are very, very similar to me in that regard.
Do you think your lifestyle might have something to do with that mentality?
I think the lifestyle was a consequence of understanding that.
Okay.
Because I found that out. I found that out about myself first before I dabbled in that.
To the industry.
Yeah, yeah. But I think, I think a lot of married men will turn to pornography as a way to not cheat on their wife. And then unfortunately, it leads that because of the access, the type of content they have access to now, the just abundance of it, mm-hmm. it gets down that rabbit hole we talked about where it just becomes more and more and more and more.
Yeah.
And they become habitually addicted to it. And then it screws up the relationship right. in the long run. Yeah. So I think that's why they go down that route. Yeah. So I think I would, to defend my original point, there's probably a lot of men out there who are resorting to porn rather than
cheating
on their wife.
Hmm. I don't know.
We don't have statistics.
Go based off testimony. I haven't heard a lot of.
If you could ever study that. I don't know if there'd be any way to ever prove that.
Well, because it's also taboo and it's not something that a lot of people are willing to talk about. Like a lot of men that are dealing with porn addictions just won't talk about it. And even if the woman is aware that there is a porn addiction, they won't talk about it because there's a sense of embarrassment or shame that comes with it. So it's not discussed.
And it's also there is also a responsibility on the man himself to recognize when he's got a problem. Like if you were an alcoholic husband, you'd want to to stop that and do something. Like if you drank too much as a husband and it was manifesting itself in like bad relationship at home with your wife, neglecting your duties as a husband or father, or whatever. Okay. Then you're going to have to do some kind of intervention and change that shit and fix it. But that's because that's very, very socially taboo and frowned upon, I think.
Right.
I think the porn addiction side of things isn't as frowned upon and taboo because we don't really talk about it like I've just talked about it. So that guy isn't going to think, oh, I have a serious problem here. I need to go seek some help.
Right.
You know, he's just going to go along with it.
So well, because it's the standard now, it's the cultural norm.
Unfortunately, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I actually think like porn should be this taboo thing. Like the fact that OnlyFans exploded during like the COVID pandemic, that's what caused OnlyFans to explode, by the way, was COVID lockdowns.
Yeah,
and
right.
COVID lockdowns, everyone's sitting at home. Well, there's two combining factors there. One, a whole bunch of dudes are sitting at home, bored, not nothing else to do. What are they going to do? They're probably going to turn to pornography. Just for novelty's sake. And two, you've got a whole bunch of women who became unemployed all of a sudden. And what are they thinking? Oh, well, I want a quick, easy buck. They think it's quick,
it's the oldest profession.
I'm going to, you know, become a sex worker. And it's not a quick, easy buck for anyone who
to that comment, it's really hard to make it to like the top 3 and 1%
it's
of OnlyFans.
It's every industry.
It's very
the same.
Difficult. Every not that I would know because, you know, I'm not an OnlyFans girl.
But like look at any profession that has a low barrier to entry, it's the top 0.01% make all the money.
Yeah.
Athletes, actors, YouTubers, musicians, mm-hmm. pornographers. All low barrier to entry industries, especially these days.
Yeah.
And no one makes any money from them. The vast majority of people don't make money from it. Only the top 0.01% make money.
Yeah. To a comment, remember during COVID, the porn sites actually started offering free memberships. Like, I think there was like Pornhub that was giving out like free whatever top tier regions was because they knew that people were at home consuming copious amounts of pornography because there was nothing else.
Would you like a real red pill on that?
Yeah.
I can give you an insight into the way that works, actually.
Yeah.
So the monetary system, like the economic system of like subscription porn sites, right?
Mm-hmm.
At the very top, let's just take Pornhub as an example, right? Pornhub is owned by a parent company called MindGeek.
Okay.
MindGeek owns, so top down, MindGeek, they own Pornhub, which is one of the biggest traffic sites on the planet. They also own about 5 of the biggest production studios on the planet too. So things like, none of you know the names of these sites I'm going to list, but things like Brazzers, Reality Kings, a bunch of these other sites, right? They own all these big studios who create the content. So it's actually a very ingenious sales funnel. They bring people to this free website where they bombard them with adverts. And they also bombard them with these like offers like $1 seven-day free trial or something like this. Basically, the goal is to get the guy who's sitting there horny with his dick in his hand to enter his credit card details.
The coomer. Yeah.
Right. So if you think of the sheer volume of traffic that website gets per day, you don't need a very, very high conversion rate. You don't. You need an infinitesimally small conversion rate to make a lot of money. And that's what happens. Guys go on there, dick in the hand, they put the credit card information in, $1 seven-day free trial, they ejaculate, they forget they entered their credit card information the next morning. 7 days later, that rebills for $29 a month. Mm. And then the other tricky part on top of this, I'm giving away a bunch of like secrets about how the old... This is literally how the industry still survives today with all this free porn. Yeah. It's purely based upon this. So he gets rebilled at $29 a month, let's say, right? If he logs into his membership area for, say, Brazzers.com or whatever, he can't cancel his membership there. He can view the content, but he can't cancel his membership. When he signed up, he would have received an email from, hey, here's your login details for Brazzers.com, but here's this innocuous email from somethingbill.xyz that he just ignores, thinking it's spam. That's his login details to the billing company where he can actually cancel the subscription. He completely forgets about it because he's never heard the name in his life. And he'll go through months and months of getting billed $29 a month, and he won't even realize how to cancel it.
Tricks. I'm not gonna say it.
I'm not. You know, the entire time I was like this. The entire time I was like this.
I'm not gonna say it.
Here's a question for you. Wasn't there, and I might be completely wrong on the historical facts on this, but isn't there some kind of correlation where the payment processing companies actually get their start through the porn industry?
They got their start.
Yeah, like that the entire payment processing, like over the internet, gets its start and blows up because of the porn industry.
Oh, yeah. The porn industry is actually always at the forefront of new technological advancements. It sounds really weird, but if you look at...
Not really.
All right. So there's a reason that VHS beat out Betamax, mm-hmm. because the porn industry chose VHS, so VHS won. There's a reason that DVDs beat out Blu-ray, because the porn industry chose DVDs, and DVDs beat Blu-ray.
Right.
There's a reason that high definition streaming content blew up. It's because, well, initially it was YouTube, and then Pornhub came along and copied it and basically perfected it and then created a bunch of other websites that copycatted it. And payment processing on the internet was also another thing they pioneered. And now we have VR headsets being pioneered by the porn industry and AI being pioneered by the porn industry. Like, it's literally because there's money there. It's a vice that has always been existent since the dawn of time.
Yeah.
And it drives that innovation because everyone's looking to get the next big buck. Right. So that's a little fun fact for you.
Let's go back to...
I told you I'd rant, didn't I? I told you I'd go off on tangents.
This is great. This is the kind of content we need.
And just a quick shout out to Robert Lee. He says, la gente...
Wait, the general?
Yeah, the general. He says, la gente que está adicta al porno no puede tener una relación normal. Una adicción de porno resulta en infidelidad o terrible sex life con su pareja. So I'll translate that for you.
Thank you.
He basically says that people that are addicted to porn can't have a normal relationship. The porn addiction usually results in infidelity or, you know, cheating or a terrible sex life with their partner.
I mean, I would make a counter argument to that. I think my opinion is, and this is just from talking to guys, is that men use it as an alternative to cheating on their partner.
Cheating.
I mean, and also, I mean, okay, let's phrase that a bit better. Men who can cheat will use it as an alternative to cheating, and men who want to cheat but can't will still use it as an alternative because they can't cheat at all because they've got no options. Right.
Yeah.
There's the number of men who can actually cheat in a relationship is very, very, very minuscule.
Correct.
Right. Because most men are not attractive to most women.
Mm-hmm. So. Wait, I got to go back to this. Right. You said that most men want to have multiple partners, or that you figured it out. You figured out early on in your life before your career.
I don't think most men want that.
Right.
I think.
Well, I think it's in their nature. I think it's in their nature to want that.
I mean, just to be pedantic and, you know, semantic. Right. I think most men have an unquenchable desire for variety.
Right.
Do most of them want to have multiple partners, or do most of them want to cheat on their partners? Mm-hmm. No, because they feel guilty and shamed for it.
Okay. It's also work.
Yeah.
That is different. That is a little bit, it's a distinction, but it's an important one.
Right.
Then there's guys like me who are honest and open with my partners about my desires. And I like, hey, hello, baby. I am not going to be faithful to you. I still love you. But I'm just not going to be faithful to you. You can choose to be with me or not. Simple as that.
So,
and they choose to be with me. So,
when we met, you said that you have four partners, right?
It is now three. I fired one this week.
Okay.
Wow, that was
quick. we need to know, okay, how this works. I like, obviously you don't have to disclose everything, but like, how does it work? You know, with obviously the women are on board, they know you're honest about it, so that's fine. You're consenting adults, but how does that work? Do you give certain amount of days to one or time, or they're just like in different areas of the world? Because I know you travel a lot. Yeah. Just overall, how is that dynamic?
I mean, they're in different areas of the world.
Okay.
Yeah. That's one of the reasons I'm going to be moving to Europe, is actually to get closer to my partners, and because I intend to start.
Okay.
You know, having kids. This year.
Okay.
Yeah, that's it. So they're in different, at the moment they're in different countries. My intention is to have babies with them all, move them all onto a giant homestead and raise a giant family. That is my intention.
Okay, so it's going to be more of like the Muslim, the Islam kind of situation.
Actually, you know what, if you actually look, and I only know this because I've spent some time in Dubai, that's actually how the sheikhs do it.
Yeah.
The way the sheikhs do it in Dubai is they'll have a giant house and each wife will have their own like little sub house off to the side. If they're not happy and they're having a moody day, they can go hang out in their house and not spoil the family vibe in the main house. And then main house is for the kids and the family and the father, and everyone get along.
Do you identify with any faith predominantly?
No, not right now. My best friend is very, very, very Christian. He is trying to convert me. I also have friends who are Muslim and they're trying to convert me. So I'm, I fundamentally do not have any problem with any of the prescriptions of Christianity or Islam. Like the prescriptive in terms of like, here is how to live your life. Here is what makes for a happy family. Here's what makes for good male-female relations. Here's what makes for good societies. Like, I actually think they're fundamentally correct on basically everything. The only thing for me personally, the only thing I wouldn't say I disagree with, but the only thing for me that I struggle with is the faithful part being monogamous.
But some would argue that, you know, back in the day and you know, especially in the Bible, right? Mm-hmm. They'd see especially the wealthier, more prominent men have multiple partners, multiple wives, and be fruitful and procreate. So it depends on who you argue.
So obviously, that's how the Mormons see it too. Yeah, with the Mormons, it's like you can have as many wives as long as you're able to provide the same lifestyle for each wife. So it's not just I just have a ton of options. Yeah. Is I'm a, I don't want to say a strong man, but I guess like I'm strong enough in my masculinity where like I can support these different households.
And that's exactly how Islam looks at it too. I'm a provider for these women.
Correct.
Right? Yeah. You shouldn't have multiple women if you can't provide for them all.
Correct.
I totally agree with that. You know what? Oddly enough, you could make the argument that I'm actually more traditional than most conservatives.
Oh,
because having multiple
conservatives in the chat would love to hear
because
more.
Especially
the women.
Because having multiple wives is way more traditional than having one wife. If you look back in time, the exact argument you just made. If you go back in time, really highly successful men had multiple wives.
No, and look in Islam, right? That's how it is.
And it was in Christians did it too.
Right, you can't really.
Popes
did it too.
Popes
I have no idea about popes.
There's a really good, really interesting book. I think it's called.
That's news to me, but not shocking.
Oh no, what was it called? I'm going to forget the name of this book now. Dang it! If it comes back to me again. But it's a book. It books it talks about like the history of. In the book, it goes over like a little bit of the infidelous past of a lot of popes and the fact that they had mistresses and things.
Well,
very, very raunchy stuff.
Look, if we're I would expect so much more of the popehood. Said no one ever, ever.
Are you Catholics or you? What's your denomination?
I'm a Catholic.
Catholic.
I was raised Catholic. I don't know if I necessarily identify as Catholic. I'm like in some weird space between Catholicism and Christianity, but
it's the same thing.
I believe in salvation through Jesus Christ, and there's no doubt.
Which I think is the main point of being a Christian. Yeah.
Just a lot of things about the Catholic faith that you begin to question, just like in any faith, right? But predominantly in the Catholic faith that kind of just, you know, you start asking questions. And the one thing that's unshakable is faith in salvation through Jesus Christ.
Good.
Well, the Catholics are the only ones that have ever stood for communists, because if it were up to the evangelicals, they would be licking the bowl out of like other religions except ours. They don't care to fight holy wars. So it's only
Russian Orthodox Church is a lot more based than the Catholic Church.
Yeah, now in modern times, not
historically.
Back in the day.
Okay, I'll agree with that. That's fine. Yeah. If you go around to like, I forget who the most Russian Orthodox countries are right now, but at least from, I know Romania for a fact, maybe Serbia, maybe, or maybe I'm incorrect about Serbia.
Ukraine, I think, has its own Orthodox Christian Church.
And Russia, definitely. Like, you ain't talking smack about Jesus Christ in any of those countries without getting your ass kicked. That is a fact.
Well, there's blasphemy laws in Russia.
Yeah.
That's why.
And to me, that I respect that version of Christianity because it has balls. Right. That's the problem with, and I'm probably going to get a lot of flack from people in the audience. Good, throw it at me. That's my problem with like American Christianity. Doesn't have balls. Like
most people in the chat will agree for sure.
Well, they're washed down. I mean, these are the same church when you're talking about Christianity in the West. These are the same churches that
got behind BLM, that got behind socialists, that, you know, joined these like mega churches for profit. So it is definitely watered down. They have LGBT service or whatnot, which, again, you should still be able to, like, you know, if you're gay and you believe in God, you should still be able to practice it. But it's a completely different thing.
They have female pastors.
Correct.
Very that is not in the Bible.
That's not biblical. I agree. Congregation should not be led by women. So when you look at, that's why I have a hard time saying like, oh, I identify as a particular as a Christian or a Catholic, because I feel like religion in itself, while it is very necessary to me, I think that religion sets a set of not rules, but expectations and societal norms that are necessary. It also helps feed faith. So if you're ever spiritually feel misguided, finding peace within your congregation, within your church is very important. But I do feel like religion in itself is very diluted in the West.
Yeah.
And it's not organic to what it used to be or what it should have been from the beginning. It just becomes another arm to influence, perverse, and take control of culture and society that like the media or big tech or anything else would.
One of my favorite things to do when I'm in Europe is to just go to
churches.
Yeah. I like cathedrals so all across Europe. It's my favorite thing to do.
Agreed.
But it's also one of the saddest things that I do. Because I every time I go into a cathedral, I'm always Spain, Portugal, France, Romania, anywhere. I'm blown away at I'm in awe at this structure that was built to God, that was built in the faith of, you know, for Jesus Christ, built for the Christian faith. The minute detail they put into that building, dedicating it towards God. I'm blown away by that. And then I'm depressed because I'm like, what happened?
Yeah.
Where did this further go? Where did this belief in God disappear? This belief in Jesus Christ, where did it disappear to? Where did it go? That was what made Europe Europe. It was incredible.
Yeah.
It was the pinnacle of Western civilization.
I mean, but it was also the Catholics, right? Because if you go to a Protestant or evangelical church, you have like an auditorium, and like they'll say that it's idol worshiping, and you can't have a Virgin Mary statue, and you can't have a cross. So it's funny. I think Allie, if she's on the chat, we were chatting last night, and she said that there's like a revival. Gen Z is like really leaning towards Catholicism. And I told her it's probably because they like the imagery, and it's probably because they like the vibes of, you know, how they make all these cool videos, like Return to Christ.
Like
the saints and like all this stuff, because what are you going to do with evangelicals and Protestants?
Well, they do a complete rejection of the culture, which doesn't attract
people. They like the veil. They like veils. Like I've seen a lot of like girls on like a girl saying, "I'm going back to church and I'm putting on my veil." It's kind of like what's in the Bible. So, I think that what do you call it? Aesthetic.
It's
the aesthetic that is maybe driving. Yeah,
I mean, people are visual. Like, like that's how you sell it. Like, even religion has marketing. You know. Like,
yeah, absolutely.
Every religion has marketing behind it.
Oh, agreed. That's kind of the problem with the religion now.
It would be ignorant to assume that it didn't have like a marketing arm to it, right? And that's you know, in large part, I think that's why a lot of these big structures were built in Europe is to the glory of God, is to be like, look, we can afford to build, like we can afford to build this, especially in Spain.
This is God's
especially
grace,
in Spain, because they went around to, you know, a few different places your parents might be from, and they took a lot of gold, but whatever. Then they came back to Spain and built these giant Catholic churches. Good for them. But that was also a large flex on everybody around. Like, we are Catholic. Look what we can do.
In Colombia, they have a lot of, they have a lot of Catholic tourism, they call it.
Well, that's just that it's in Latin America in general. Like, it's just an appreciation for Catholicism. Yeah. The same thing can be said about Cuba.
This is not where I expected this conversation to go.
We're going to switch back. Sorry, guys. I thought we were talking about porn.
I just steered it in this direction because I was curious about it.
We went to the Islam thing, and there was something else. I don't know. Maybe if you remember.
Well, we were talking about the multiple relationships, but I guess that my question to you is you've accepted that you yourself you can't be monogamous. That's not your lifestyle. Do you think, given that there's been some studies that link that consuming pornography, and I can't imagine I don't know what studies have been done and actually performing in the industry, but given that there's studies that show that pornography
can change the neurotransmitters in the brain.
Absolutely.
And
absolutely.
How it is that you view relationships, sexual intercourse, etc. Do you feel that this lifestyle is something that innately you were born with, or do you think that it's a product of, you know, maybe consuming porn early on or experimenting early on in your sexuality? Do you think that that was innate in you, or do you think that it's a product of the society around you?
It's an interesting question. Honestly, I think it's more of a product of my success.
Okay.
Like the fact that I have most men don't have options. They really
accessibility
don't.
To the options.
Yeah, like the fact that I can do it is kind of what led me down that path, I think. Like, if I'm being brutally honest with myself.
You couldn't do what? Sorry.
Like if I wasn't able to be attractive to women in the first place, then I'd probably be happily monogamous with one woman. You know what I'm saying? Right. But the fact that I know I can attract different women, it kind of lends itself towards like, well, why? Yeah. Like for me personally,
you're fighting a vice that's not true.
Yeah, it's like you could say there's societal pressure against me to do that. There's definitely shame and guilt that is thrust upon men to try and enforce them to be monogamous. And I'm not pointing a finger at religion. I'm pointing my finger everywhere.
Right.
But I just don't accept that kind of propaganda and brainwashing personally. And I don't feel guilt and shame about being a man and having desires and because I'm not hurting anybody with what I'm doing. Like, I'm gonna raise beautiful kids. I'm actually gonna raise them religiously, oddly enough, like Christian, most likely. Yeah, very likely Christian. One of my girls is literally a pastor's daughter.
Oh wow. So you're getting trad girls?
Yeah, one girl, like they're all religious. Religious girls. Yeah, which would probably piss off a lot of people hearing this, actually.
How do they feel about your, you know, your background
You know what? That has never come up, oddly enough. And that surprised me.
But they know.
They know.
They know. Okay. Yeah,
but zero problem. Zero problem with it, which is really surprising. Women are a lot more forgiving about that than you would think. Men are definitely not forgiving about that.
I think it also goes into like the bad boy thing, right? He's like a reformed bad boy.
Well, maybe, this is where maybe, I was maybe, going. Maybe. What if he gets a bad girl? Because here's the thing. Here's what I've noticed, right?
Like, I don't like the bad girls. They're boring. Bad girls are annoying.
But there is some girls that will finesse you. They make you believe they're the good girls or trad. They have game, just like you have game.
Just true.
And then they're probably sleeping with like 10 men on the side. Do you think, because I've seen this story before. I've seen this before where the guy, he was promiscuous. He was, you know, whatever. He was getting all the girls. And then there was this one girl that it was like reverse. It was like the Uno card. And then she came along and she's the hoe and she's having sex with everybody or being extremely flirty, maybe not sleeping with everybody, but you know, she just has that swag and that's the girl that he wants. And that's the girl that he wants to wife up and have kids with. And he stops his, I mean, not forever, maybe.
Well, I mean, I think that that's also like a standard here.
You know what I'm talking about.
We see that a lot.
Does she know the exact
Miami
guy you're talking about?
Well, the thing is that it's not one guy. It's something that you see happen a lot here in Miami where we'll make commentary of, you know, we've got men love talking to us to a degree because they're like, oh, you guys are based. Your mentality is different than most women that we come across. So we have a lot of people that come to us and talk to us with their stories. And it seems like a pattern that we consistently see is the average man. I wouldn't necessarily consider, you know, somebody who has access to top tier, the average guy, but the average man will say, I want a good woman. I want to settle down. I want to find something solid. Yep. And then it seems like 9 times out of 10, they're not going to go for the actual good girl.
No, I'll tell you why, because they can't find them.
I'll
give you the brutal honest truth. Because they end up with guys like me. That will sting to a lot of guys hearing that. But those, me and my friends who live very similarly to me, they end up with guys like us.
But I think that it's
because we're
different.
Not boring.
But
we excite them. And these women, sorry to cut you off.
No, go ahead.
And these women know that they are a rare commodity, so they go for the top of the top, the cream of the crop.
But you're talking about I'm talking about
an average girl. So here you have an you're talking about a woman that also has a choice, a high value woman. Maybe she's exceptionally attractive and she can take her pick of men.
Very feminine, very religious, these kind of women.
But I'm also talking about the average girl. So here's an average guy. He's not by any means top 1% or anything like that. Average dude, 40K a year, average bill, maybe somewhat sort of a dad bod, average. And then you have a girl who's also average. Maybe she's got another, you know, 40K job. Maybe she's a school teacher. Maybe she's whatever. And you will see these men make the decision to date the Instagram hoes that give them attention. They don't have money. So it's not like they're after them for the money.
Yeah. Right.
What they see is the commodity of like, oh, this girl is hotter. More men want her. She's more of a conquest.
But does he want to
dog in heat?
Is he trying to settle down with her though?
They do. That's the part that's ridiculous to us. And it's like they come back 2 months later.
That is a consequence of most men not being red pilled. That is what we would call
fair.
I would call that fair. A man who makes that decision, I would probably say he's blue pilled.
Okay.
Upon what his decision
making
criteria is. Oh, I'm gonna wife this woman up because she's hot.
Okay.
Irrespective of the fact that she's flashing her tits all over Instagram.
Right.
That to me is a guy who's clearly blue-pilled.
Yeah. Yes.
Right. Okay. He does not understand.
It is fairness because then the numbers are that most people are blue-pilled because it is something that we see often where it's like you see these genuine good guys. My best friend, I'm not going to name himself. I'm not going to call you out.
Call him out.
I'm not going to call you out. He knows who he is.
Angel, by the way, this is amazing. I'm loving this. Can I get a shot on this? Angel tried to oh, watch out. This rum's really strong. No, it's not.
Angel, we need to run. You need to get in contact so we can run promotion for this rum company. On live, we need to do it.
Jamaican rum.
A tequila company we can get on board.
I'm telling you, we're slipping on that. But so my best friend, bless his heart, and we've been best friends since we were 14 years old.
This is a spy.
Standard average guy, cool guy, you know, well known. He goes to the clubs. Everybody knows who he is. I'd still say he's average. Got an average job. He's not rich by any means. He's short or anything like that. And he's had some girls that I consider quality standard women, right? Maybe they have like a good job. They come from a good home. They're religious. They don't cheat. They love him. They want to be together. And every single time he'll go for like the raunchy, dancing on bars. And that's what he wants. And I'll finish your point.
Sorry.
Yeah. I always tell him like, what is it? Is it the idea that like other men find them sexually attractive? So then that's where you lean to because it helps you feel better. Like, does it make you feel like more of a man that other men around you want the woman that you're with? Or where do you think that comes from?
There's a couple of things there. So one, it is that. It is like the ability, like you want, a man wants to be able to show his woman off. A man wants other men to be jealous of the woman he has. Truly. Yeah. Really, really, truly. One of my friends has this amazing quote. He was like, women are the best jewelry a man can wear. Mm-hmm. If you walk into a room and you have a beautiful woman on your arm, everybody pays attention to you as a man. Men respect you more for walking into a room with a beautiful woman. This is a fact. This is how really intelligent men use this in business meetings and things.
Yeah.
Okay. So that's point one. Point two, one of the reasons possibly, hypothetically, why this particular man or men like him are passing up on the good girls, let's say, the girl who's very, very religious, prim and proper, very feminine, it could be because she can't satisfy him in the bedroom. That is entirely a possibility because she is boring to him. And I don't mean that she has to start drama out in relation, but if she is as doting inside the bedroom as she is outside the bedroom, I don't see any man turning that down. Like, you're going to be religious, like a good religious girl. You're going to be faithful to me. You're going to be feminine. You're going to maintain a good home, raise great kids, take care of all this stuff. Right. And you're going to be you're going to be submissive and rock my socks in the bedroom. No one's turning that down. That's ridiculous. So I think a lot of guys will probably make these terrible decisions. I agree they are terrible decisions. And go after this more raunchy girl because he is getting something in that department, the sexual department, that he was probably bored with a good girl. And this is something I I talk about as well is the fact that, like, what happens between two people in the privacy of their bedroom is no one else's business, right? Just because you are Christian, just because you are a religious and you have good morals and you behave very well, doesn't mean you can't, with your loving partner in the privacy of your own home, doesn't mean you can't get freaky every now and then.
Like, no, absolutely.
You don't have to. I think there's a big, there is a lot of guilt and shame that is thrust upon people, men and women, by religions in regards to sex. And it's the purpose of it is to stop infidelity, and the purpose of it is to especially for women, to make them chaste. And that makes sense, to not be, you know, promiscuous. Yeah. That makes sense. However, if you have a partner, if you have a husband or a wife, then you should feel free to let those shackles off and not feel shame and guilt around sex. And I think a lot of religious people still have that hang up of guilt and shame around anything sexual, when you should be,
that's kind of true.
You should be free to explore that with your loving partner.
I also wonder one thing, and it's in an effort to also bring the conversation full circle. Do you think that these fantasies that are outside of the norm are, that men are looked seeking out porn to fulfill these fantasies in, out of not feeling like they're comfortable enough to have these conversations with their partners?
Totally. Yes. Totally. Yeah. Guys will feel very, very insecure about any kind of fantasy they have, and bringing it up. I know this because I have conversations with guys about this every day. Like, oh, I would like to try this with my partner. How do I convince her that I'm not a creepy weirdo?
Because there are guys too, and I've seen this with some of my friends, they marry the good girl because they want to meet the boxes, right? Like you said, she's religious, she's feminine, I see her having kids, she blah, 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 the whole thing. And then they realize that she doesn't satisfy them, so they have to look for that, for the sexual satisfaction elsewhere, outside, and they have their side hoes.
So,
right?
Sorry to cut you off again. Question is, like, whose responsibility is that then? Like, who's to blame, and who's, this is just a hypothetical, genuine question. Whose responsibility is that, and who's to blame that he wants to do that? Should she not look, because it's a two-way street. Should she not look introspectively and be like, I should probably, like, he's taking care of me. He's a loving husband and father. He's providing for me. Maybe I should learn how to satisfy him in the bedroom.
You know what? This reminds me of, did you watch Game of Thrones?
Yeah.
Okay. Do you remember the first season when Daenerys was sold off to Drago? She was like 14, 15 years old, and she didn't know how to have sex because she was a virgin. So the first times they had sex, it was like really uncomfortable. And basically he was kind of like low-key raping her. And then she was like, you know, that she's like, okay, I'm stuck in this situation. This is my husband. I'm going to have to satisfy him, which is where her handmaid or whatever comes in and teaches her, hey, this is what you do. Like, this is how you, so it depends, because sometimes if these guys marry the younger girl who hasn't had a lot of, being that she doesn't have a lot of experience in bed, right? Because obviously now women start having sex at like 14 years old.
That's a rare woman to find.
Exactly. Very,
especially in Miami.
Exactly. There's like
doesn't exist in Miami. let's be honest.
We have an Amish community in Homestead. I don't know if you know about this. We have an Amish community in Homestead. Yeah. Very small.
So I can get some raw milk.
Yeah. You can get raw milk. You can get butter.
We tried to kill his mom the other day, Linda.
That's true. But they exist, is my point. They exist. The Amish community exists.
That's the right example. Dude just tried to kill his mom.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
But I
maybe I went buy milk off him.
Well, you know what it comes down to, and here's, in my early 20s, I went through like a spiritual type therapist, and they linked a lot of religion. It was actually Catholic based with psychology, and they kind of like brought it on together. But one of the main things that they discussed was that, you know, it's not just about what we're physically and mentally, but that we are also sexualized beings. And that part, the biggest disservice that the church has done is to make sex this shameful thing, when it should be considered part, like, sexual development and healthy sexual relationships are a very human aspect of life.
Of course.
So when you've got the church, let's say that you find a good Christian girl, you find her in a youth group, and you've been in this youth group, you know, your whole life, and you were in the, you know, you grew up together when you were teenagers, when you were 22 years old, you got married, you had your babies by the time that you were 24, and you're living this absolute trad life. That same church will make you feel shameful for having thoughts outside of normal standard sex. If you want to talk about
missionary,
if you want to talk about getting spicy or creative or bringing toys or whatever the hell it is, you know, if you want to talk about that, the church will make you feel shame about that. So then what it does is it almost creates like a wall where even if you wanted to grow this very natural sexual relationship with your partner could be inclined to feel shame in that because of societal pressures, not because they're not a wife that would want to cater to her husband or because they might not be into it. They just would never give it a chance because it's the same society that breeds these trad women of respect that men want to marry in 20 years and start a family with. Is that same society that's going to limit how comfortable they are with their sexuality?
Yeah, so it's okay. A fine line. You don't want to promote the sexuality stuff too much because then you end up with like drag queen story hour.
Right. Like, we said we weren't going to talk about that.
Yeah. Wait, quick shout out to Stacy. She's with us today. She says great show tonight. She gave us a super chat. So Stacy, thank you so much.
Stacy, always coming through.
And we look forward to your tequila bottle, by the way. We'll
is Stacy sending tequila?
She says she was.
I love our followers. Yeah, I love you guys so much. Guys, remember that we are self-funded, no Illuminati, no lizard people, just patrons. We strongly depend on you to keep the show going. So your contributions are always highly appreciated. We appreciate you guys for being here with us.
I have a question, another question, right? So, you know, everything is energy. I'm sure that you believe in
this
energy.
Sounds a bit woo-woo bullshit to me already. Come on, continue. Everything's energy. That sounds like something a hippie would say.
Okay. Go okay. On. It is, but
I'm joking.
Okay. How do you feel about having that many sex partners and the exchange of energy and how that affects people's souls, like both for men and women? Because that's my thing, right? Like I'm very like, and whether it's a hippie thing or not a hippie thing, people believe it or not, like I feel like every time you sleep with someone, especially I feel like maybe more as a woman, you're obviously like getting, like you're letting someone physically inside of you. They're taking a piece of your soul and exchanging that energy, right? That's creative energy. When you think about it, you have sex to procreate. That was the original or like the basis
That's
of
That's the
sex.
Reason for it.
That's the reason for it. So how do you feel about that exchange of energy and having multiple partners? Like, does that affect you mentally, physically, spiritually, and
do you just not feel that at all?
You know what?
You just don't care.
You know what's interesting is that there's a couple of things there. So first of all, one of the most common comments I receive from anyone who interviews me for the first time is that I'm very well adjusted.
Okay.
And like my experience in the adult industry has not damaged me in any way. I didn't come out of that industry damaged, jaded, addicted to drugs, like none of this stuff.
Right.
I'm a happy guy and I'm very fulfilled in my life. And I can't say that. Mm-hmm. I couldn't make that statement about most of the women I've worked with in the industry. So I think there is a massive, massive difference between men and women in terms of having multiple large quantities of sexual partners affects women a lot, and it doesn't really affect guys. All the men that I know who have had a lot of partners are typically super successful men who are very happy, very fulfilled, making a bunch of money, hitting the gym all the time, helping other men, helping other people in some way, shape, or form. And I can't say the same thing about women I know who've had a lot of partners, unfortunately. So it's fundamentally like your point applies to women.
Okay.
I don't think your point applies to men at all, unfortunately. And that's just purely from not just my experience, but because of the people I know and hang out with.
Yeah. What do you think?
Men and women are different.
Well,
fundamentally,
men and women are fundamentally different. I do agree. Like I said, like, I just wonder, like, even for men, I mean, it's kind of hard not to make that argument because here you have, you don't feel affected by it, granted. But you're also not standard norm.
That's true. But it also doesn't mean
lifestyle,
doesn't mean I can't fall in love with somebody. I love my girlfriends. I love them.
Love your girlfriends. I love some people, but I'm not
love
in
them.
Love with them.
I truly
them.
Love them. I'm in love with them. I tell them I love them.
Okay.
And they tell me they love me too. And it's, but
when you say
I'm
love.
Able to love, like I have the ability to fall in love with multiple women.
Do you think
comes back to fundamentally why I can't be monogamous.
Do you think that you lack a certain sense of vulnerability that comes from monogamous relationships that
I don't think there's anything vulnerable about being in a monogamous relationship.
You don't think so? I think you just don't know.
I think it's restrictive. I don't think it's vulnerability.
I mean, because there's kind of an investment being made,
right? But I'm making that investment multiple times. I'm doing the exact same thing you're doing, just multiple times.
Where's the long-term commitment, though?
Having kids and raising those kids and looking after my women and having them providing an entire homestead.
We know someone like that, but we just can't say.
We can't say names.
We know someone.
You guys want to know the name? Maybe the right super chat will get you the name.
Tell me no, after the show.
We're not going to swap notes with him.
No, we do,
and you know, it was kind of like, I guess, you know, the women around his life, just like yours, are fine with that lifestyle and they've accepted it.
And not every woman is going to be fine with that. It's fine.
And look, to be fair, obviously that's not what I want. But to be fair, especially like in Colombia, most men, even the ones that don't make a lot of money, usually have like multiple families. You find out, and it's like,
that's very Latino. My father, that's culture,
that's very,
right? Like, yeah, it's super Latino. Like, my father has three kids with a maid. Like, that's actually
my dad couldn't be faithful.
Like, that actually happened to us.
But I think that says more about like men biologically than anything else.
We see this across cultures.
You see it again and again and again.
What was your situation at home? Are your parents married or divorced?
My mother has unfortunately passed away about 5 years ago. But she, anyway. But my parents were happily married their entire life. I come from a very, very stable.
I'm from like a cookie cutter home.
Literally cookie cutter family. Right.
And I don't think that's always the case. Like, you come from a broken home. So like,
No, it's not always the case.
So my father, we found.
I'm not offended you asked the question. Yeah. It's a good question to ask because I do think that actually matters. I do think that matters. Like,
how do you think
probably the reason that I'm so well adjusted is because I came from a very, very happy family.
How do you think that stabilizes you? Like, what kind of foundation do you think that's set for you?
I don't know. One thing I'll say is that my father was a provider. He wasn't a teacher.
Okay.
So I had to learn about life and about what it means to be a man from the internet, unfortunately, as a younger man. I mean, I'm very grateful that I had the internet because I had to look up to like various different – I was able to find mentors through the internet as a young man that my father wasn't necessarily capable of fulfilling or didn't – put any effort towards fulfilling.
Or some of the mentors.
He provided, but you know what's funny? Elliot Hulse was actually one of my early mentors. I actually was a big fan of Elliot Hulse. I'd love to meet him one day. Yeah. Elliot Hulse, Tim Ferriss, Tony Robbins earlier on. Yeah, just off the top of my head, just a few guys.
What about Andrew Tate?
I mean, he's a friend. He's a personal friend, so yeah. It's a bit different. I mean, there's a mutual level of respect there, yeah.
How did you meet him? How did you guys become friends?
I met his brother through Twitter. me and Tristan got into a polite argument, you could say, on Twitter. I disagreed with him about something and we had this polite back and forth. Then I invited Tristan onto my YouTube channel to interview him, and we got along great, had a really, really fun conversation. You can find it, still on my YouTube channel. Turns out we actually were Eskimo brothers because we'd both been with some of the Romanian porn star or whatever. So that was funny. And then Andrew followed me. I started talking with Andrew. And at that time, because when was it? End of 2020, I believe. So COVID stuff was going on. And I was in LA at the time. And I was like, I need to get the hell out of LA because LA is a shithole.
Of course.
California is a giant shithole.
Yeah.
So leave, right? And I came to Florida. But what I also did was I went to Europe with a friend, my best friend. This is a very, very fundamentalist Christian friend of mine. And we basically spent 3 months running from one country to another through Europe, avoiding all the COVID laws and getting in trouble with police and stuff everywhere we went.
We also know somebody who did that.
Andrew and Tristan were doing that as well. And that's we kind of bonded over that because we were both looking for like somewhere where this insanity wasn't happening. And Andrew and Tristan found, I think was it Sweden or Switzerland, I think?
Sweden. Yeah.
Yeah. And I ended up in... We ended up in Portugal, but it eventually caught up with Portugal.
Okay.
Eventually. It was one of the last. It was almost like it was making its way across Europe, and then it got to Portugal and caught up with it eventually. But yeah, and then those two invited me to an event they had in Vegas a few months later. And I went and met them in Vegas in person, and we've been friends ever since.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah. And the thing that most people don't realize about Andrew and Tristan, especially Andrew Tate, is you don't know, you have no idea who he actually is.
We talk about this all the time. He's an online actor, acting.
Imagine that it's all like how much of his personality is for camera and for show, and then how different could that potentially be? Which it seems like it could be radically different from how he.
If you actually know Andrew's background, you will realize that he's been on multiple reality TV shows as a young man. He is an expert marketer. He is amazing at getting attention.
Right.
There we go.
We talk about it all the time.
He is, I mean, literally the best in the world at it, because he was the most Googled man on the planet. He went from nothing to the most Googled man on the planet. Everyone's still talking about him, even though he has no voice. He's in detention, and everyone's still talking about him.
Yeah.
He is amazing at marketing, right? But that is not who... That is Cobra Tate. I'll say that's the persona that you see.
Mm-hmm.
That is not Andrew the man. Andrew the man is the most generous, loving, wholesome man you could possibly imagine. He will, you know, give you the shit off his back. He is so generous with all the people he holds dear, all his friends, all his family. He's an amazing father, amazing husband. Well, not husband, I mean, he's not married, but, you know, he's an amazing partner, I should say. And an amazing brother. He is undying loyalty for Tristan. It's incredible. Like he holds his family.
You can see that.
Like it warms my heart.
Like him. And honestly, that's the thing I that inspires me the most about Andrew and Tristan is their brotherhood. And I hope to replicate that with my sons one day. That level of trust and faith and camaraderie that they have for each other. I want my boys, when I eventually have them, I want them to have that between themselves.
I hear you say boys. How do you feel about having girls?
I mean, it's a 50-50 roll of the dice, isn't it? they're going to come out.
But how do you think that
I intend to have like 20 kids, so they're going to come out.
So Andrew's actually made comments about how he would treat raising his girls much different than his men. What's your take on that, kind of coming from the industry that you were in, seeing that and, you know, being a father to a young woman who you want to be a young lady, how do you foresee your lifestyle affecting?
Very good question. So obviously I'm not a father yet. This is all speculation. Everything I'm saying, it's all speculation right now. I have friends who've had a couple of friends, very close friends who've just had oddly enough, they both had their first two daughters. Like also they've had their first daughter within like a week of each other. And they got pregnant again at the exact same time, and it's a daughter again. And in having conversations with them, it is very, very clear that as a man, they feel less pressure raising a daughter.
Okay.
Because if you raise, and I have friends who've obviously had sons too, there's a pressure as a man to raising a son to make sure he doesn't turn into a fuck up, to make sure you are ingraining as many positive, strong traits in him at a young age and setting a good example for him. With raising a daughter, it, from what I've heard at least, it seems that it's basically a case of love them. Just let them know that they're loved by their father and be a strong father figure in the household and have obviously your wife loves you, right?
Yeah.
But having her mother respects you and you love your daughter. That is the two-step formula for raising a good daughter. It seems pretty basic.
How would you feel if you had a son or daughter told you that they wanted to get into the industry?
I mean, I would be completely honest about my past with my kids. I think that would be a good way to prevent that.
That makes sense.
Hey, dad did this, and you have this lavish... I don't want to raise my kids very lavishly. You have this farm where you now milk cows every morning because I was able to take that experience and help men because of it, right? You shouldn't do it, is what I would tell them.
Yeah.
I have a theory on the Tate brothers, and I may be wrong. Do you know Gigi and Bella Hadid, the models?
Bella Hadid? No. No,
maybe he wouldn't get it.
Don't know them. That name doesn't ring a bell.
Do you think
they're only the two most famous models? Yeah, they're the...
oh, like okay, I ain't simping following models on Instagram. Sorry.
Well, they're actual models. They're not like the Insta models.
No, they're real models.
Legitimate. Yeah. So have a, so basically two models. The mom used to be a supermodel as well. Gigi was like the beautiful, perfect child. She was getting modeling gigs for guests and she was like 6 years old. And Bella was like the ugly duckling of the family. Like she wasn't the pretty one. So the mom kind of like neglected her, right? She comes to her teen years and she, you know, they have money. They're from Hollywood. She gets a nose job, right? Mm. So she says the nose is
the ugly one gets the nose job.
But the rejection from her mother and the fact that her sister was like the preferred model, she got all the gigs and it was so easy for her, made her be like, okay, I'm going to be the best supermodel in the world, regardless whether, you know, all I need to do is fix my nose. And she is now topped her sister and she's bigger than her sister ever will because her sister didn't really have to work for it. She already had the looks. She had her mom and just, you know, just they just gave her the gigs. So Bella, being the ugly one, gets a nose job, tops her sister, becomes the biggest supermodel in the world. Do we think, because I honestly find Tristan Tate way hotter than Andrew. Like, I do. I think he's super fine. Not to say that Andrew's not attractive. I think he's super attractive. He's got the swag. He has the whole thing. Do we think, is it, because I've seen videos of like Tate, like before he became like, you know, the especially from Victor with the K, he's like obsessed with him. So he's always sending me videos. So do we think that that is the same thing, that Tristan was just like naturally the hotter brother and he probably got all the girls very easy. And Tate was like, I need to be like the baddest one. Like I got to work harder. And therefore he became the more popular one.
No, he had to work harder. He took it upon himself to work harder because he was the older brother.
Okay.
And he always took that responsibility. And I think his father ingrained that in him, Emery, you know, God rest his soul.
That actually comes through in their dynamics.
Yeah. He, you talk about that to Andrew at any point, he will agree. Like he took the responsibility as the older brother. And Tristan always, if they ever get into an argument, Andrew decides because he's the older brother. Tristan will defer to Andrew.
You can tell by looking at their content that there's a certain level of protection that Andrew has for Tristan.
He's the patriarch of the family.
Yeah.
Like he is literally responsible for their name.
How many kids do they have now? Does he have now 12?
No, he doesn't have 12.
No? That's what I saw on Twitter. I follow like the Tate.
I'm pretty sure. I'm pretty sure they have 12. It doesn't have that many, no.
Oh, man. Yeah. No, yeah.
They've got kids. They both got kids.
Yeah.
I had a question off the top of my head, and now I completely forgot. I forgot it. But we can't be talking all over each other, and I completely forgot. Let's we want to take a minute to take a couple of questions. Yes, I think that we've been going for the chat.
In that case, let's get some more.
Yeah, we got a lot of opinions on the chat. Gotcha. This is a little out of our standard guest guy.
My guy Angel. I like this guy.
He makes things happen.
You need more like on camera appearances, Angel.
He's great. He's the best.
Yeah. You need like behind the scenes camera they have with like the director. You need one of those for Angel.
So if you guys want to ask our guests some questions or us or comments, please put it in the chat. Use the super chat as well. We'll be here for a little bit. Let me see what this guy said. Looks help the gents when they're broke. I speak from my past experiences. Yeah, same thing with a woman, oh, yeah. Right?
Women.
100%. It's kind of like my friends and I, especially when we were younger and carefree. We'd say that we'd go to Vegas and you can go to Vegas with like $20 and like just book a hotel and your flight and you'll come back with money because you don't have to pay for anything as a girl in Vegas. I mean, don't pay for anything. You go out, you go
some
to
might call that female privilege.
It is actually female privilege for sure. And then, you know,
but it's also a privilege that not every woman has because there is pretty girl privilege is a thing.
Yeah, totally. But
yeah, I don't think that it's, you know, part of my issue with the manosphere is that I feel like it makes the assumption that everyone is high value, that
women are, that it
feels like all of the rules are made off high value people. And it doesn't, I don't feel like it encompasses the average person.
Yeah, the average guy
and the average woman.
I actually do have a problem with that myself. I cannot stand using the words high value.
Yeah.
Alpha.
Right.
Beta.
Done. Red pill.
I hate using these words. Cannot stand when
because it just seems
It's just because it becomes super like autistic when people try to like, is he alpha? Is he an alpha male or a beta male or a sigma male or a delta phi omega male? I don't give a crap. Like stop sitting on the internet and like trying to like categorize dudes who you've got no, who have one, like you're probably never gonna meet. Two, what does it even matter if this random celebrity is like an alpha, sigma, beta, whatever the frig made up. Yeah. Like I'm not trying to swear on your show. Whatever, okay. I'm getting on a rant now. Whatever, you know, bucket you want to categorize him in, it doesn't affect your life. Focus on yourself, for God's sake.
And that's
you're sitting there looking and trying to categorize guys like that, you've got work to do, my friend. And you need to introspectively look at yourself and say, okay, where am I fucking up?
And that's what we see all the time.
I've met one of these internet manosphere. I'm not gonna say any names. I'm not gonna say any names. But I've met some of this manosphere, like super awful. They're preaching on the internet, blah blah blah. I meet them in person, and I'm like, they're like, a little dog. I mean,
you've also met me.
I know. Yes.
I am in that crowd. You can categorize me in the crowd.
But
and I ain't like you. You've enjoyed your time around me.
No, 100%. And I wouldn't. Like but that. No, I would
absolutely.
Never, but, I would never turn around and be like, "Well, that's not the."
I know
real,
what you're talking about.
You know
though,
who I'm talking
like,
about.
It's this personality that the average man of time is like, "Oh, this is the epitome of what I want to be, and in shape and mentally and everything." And then you meet them in person, and you're like, oh, this isn't at all the energy that I thought was. No. This guy just got, we're not going to use the word alpha, but this guy really did just get out alpha by the most average.
Oh my
person.
God. We literally know, like, he got like somebody and they got alphaed out.
You have to tell me who this is.
Well, after the show, we're not going to say any names. We're not going to say any names.
You did an entire show where it's just you saying names.
Sometimes we do. Last show was crazy. We were dropping names all the time.
And the people love it. The people love when we start dropping the names. It usually gets us into a lot of trouble though, but we do drop the names. You know, it's a conversation that we have often is that part of the problem with the manosphere is that now you've got all of these average, below average dudes on the internet who now think that because they've watched 16 hours of Andrew Tate that they can go online and then start setting the barometer for to categorize women and where they stand. And it's like, well, I mean, realistically, dude, you're just some loser on the internet just because you watch Tate videos doesn't make you a high value person.
So this is a problem I have on the internet these days. And I call it the perpetual circle of uselessness.
Oh.
So the perpetual circle of uselessness is when you have a guy teaching, a person teaching other people how to be like a success coach when all they've ever actually done is teach other people how to be a success coach. They don't have any success in their life to teach. They don't have any skills. Yeah. They don't have any background. They haven't gone through fire and brimstone and come out the other end a better man who's learned things about the world. I particularly have a problem with really young guys who tend to do
this. There's
a
lot of them.
Who are like, I'm online CEO coach X factor 4,000. And now I'm going to teach you how to run a coaching business. And in reality, all he's doing is teaching guys to operate the exact same business model that he's running again and again and again. And no value is added to the world at all. It's a complete crock of shit. I can't stand it. Rant over. I understand exactly what you're saying about like that. And like all the guys I highly respect in the manosphere or in this red pill online space, they're all guys who've accomplished things in their life. You know, they've run successful businesses. They've been at, you know, the top tiers of their profession. Like they've gone through trials and tribulations that most men wouldn't come out the other side of. And so they have my respect as a man. Mm-hmm. And so that's when I will look at them and be like, okay, I will listen to this man. And so should you. And I'll endorse this man. Right. But you don't have to, and I will say also, there is a difference between being, you know, like, I hate the word, but quote unquote, like alpha or whatever, and being like, being an imposing, domineering figure when you meet somebody, right? And being an intellectual. You can fundamentally understand a concept and be able to teach people that concept without actually embodying it 100% through and through. You totally can, because
people do it all the time.
I don't think that's a bad thing. Like, you can be because some people are really, really good teachers. They really are amazing teachers and they're amazing theoreticians. Is that the correct word? I hope that's the correct word. Like, they're amazing. They're amazing at theorizing, right? They're amazing at joining the dots together and seeing patterns. They're amazing at that. when it comes to the practical application of that, not as good as someone else. Fine. But they have a place in that community, in that group, to teach others. And so I think that there are, but that I do agree that there are some guys who come into that space because it's hot right now.
I just think it gets so
and they're just repeating talking points.
I'll give an example.
You're telling average, and just to say this and get it out so I don't forget it. I just feel like, is it not doing more damage where it's most people are average? Like most people are not above average. Most people are average.
Yes.
So if the entire preach is teaching average dudes where it's like, oh, if you want to be a high value man, you want to attract a high value woman, chances are you're never going to be a high value man because you're not going to be a part of the 1%. You're probably never going to attract a high value woman.
So their standards, right?
So then it's almost like this dangerous standard where now the average is not considered. So when they get a normal average girl, do they feel like they are dating below? Are they going to be on the hunt now thinking that there's always going to be something better there because they're thinking of this definition of high value?
Today, for a guy to get a average girl, he has to be above average. That's just the fact.
Well, that's absolutely.
Women are not looking for the average guy. Most women it's women that are doing this, by the way. Women dictate the sexual marketplace. Women dictate who they open their legs for. Women dictate who they have sex with, who they get into, like who they partner up with. Men dictate whether or not you're a girlfriend, but women dictate who has sexual access, 100%, right? So you need to look at, okay, yeah, there's the average guy, but for him to even have a chance at the average girl, he has to stand out in some way, shape, or form. So that's why a lot of these guys are saying, oh, like, here's what the top 1% men do and act like and look like. And you know, they're successful this way, this way, this way, right? Because they're trying to take the average guy and level it, the average guy who will even listen to them. Because most men, like we said, aren't red-pilled. Most men aren't listening for this advice. Most men aren't doing any kind of self-improvement at all.
Yeah.
Fine. They can stay exactly where they are. The guys who do want help, the guys who do look to try and improve and try to better the situation, we can at least raise them up and give them a fighting chance.
Yeah, I do think it's definitely doing something for young men. And I actually think it's doing a lot for young women because there's a certain sense of like, shit, like the entire manosphere hates whores. I don't want to be a whore. Like, I do think it's doing more for young women almost than for men because there's like a certain sense of like, shit, like this is what's being just a lack of not knowing where a girl can grow up thinking, oh, when I dance in front of guys, I get attention and not realize that it's like, but that's not the attention you want. So there is a part of the manosphere that I do believe has brought in positive things to a new generation. But then I also just don't feel like there's a lot of people can be identified by it. We'll take somebody like, you know, when you're on Fresh and Fit, the majority of the girls there are Instagram baddies. So when they ask them,
because we're in Miami.
What do you want? Well, I mean,
Not even that attractive. Not even that hot.
I consider myself, you know, average, and my husband's a good average guy. When we got together, it wasn't about, is he making six figures? It's like, is this a guy that can maintain a home?
This is where I was going.
That's going to be a leader.
If you guys want to go, I'm friends with Byron. You guys want to get on Fresh and Fit? I would happily have you on.
It's like a younger,
I just feel like that's usually the demographic when they ask.
It would be very enlightening,
right,
for the viewers and for the other women that you'd probably have on the show to have you two sitting there and schooling these women.
I think so, because I feel like a lot of them are represented. I don't know if it's a generational thing, but I just don't feel represented when they're like, oh, what, you know, women ask for too much. And then they ask these baddies, what are you looking for? And it's like, oh, I want a guy that's making, you know, $1 million a month and all these other things.
That's what
like,
he's saying. That's what he said earlier.
But is the average woman really identified by those women?
No, they're not. But that's this is where I was going.
Yeah.
This is where I was going. When I was in college, most people got together and they started at zero, right? This was before.
You mean like couples?
Couples, yeah, right. Yeah, yeah. So if you married your college sweetheart, the chances were, unless they came from rich families and they were working through college, which was very hard if you were going to college full time, you both start at zero, right? So you're working here, he's working there, you're both building a family, you're saving up for your first apartment, for your first home, and you both grow together, right? My friend Alyssa, it's the perfect example. And they both came from really good families. Families well off, but the families made them work because of the traditional Cubans are like, you got to work for your shit, right? So they both start at zero. The parents say, here's a loan so you can buy your first house. And they're both, now they're well off. He's the full provider. She gets to stay home with the kids, with the two children, and raise a beautiful family.
But she also picked a good racehorse.
Technically, but they build it together. She also supported him while he didn't have anything.
Oh, totally.
But that's what I'm saying.
But the point I'm trying to make is, like, that is, as a young woman, that is kind of the gamble you have to take. Because, well, what year were you in college?
I graduated 2012.
2012? Yeah, okay. So Instagram was already around.
We had Facebook in 2012.
Yeah.
From a different generation.
Yeah. Because that has a massive impact.
Yeah.
Massive.
Yeah,
of course. Absolutely.
On the dating marketplace and the way that men and women interact ever since that came out. If there was one thing I could change about the world, it would be to get rid of Instagram instantly. I think if you got rid of Instagram and dating apps, you would male-female relationships would instantaneously autocorrect.
Do you think that Instagram causes more damage than TikTok? Because I know TikTok gets a really bad rap.
It's just TikTok is like Instagram on crack for women.
TikTok, you feel?
Yeah, it's on crack.
I feel like there's always more hypersexualization on Instagram than there is on TikTok. I don't know if it's just the algorithm.
Both Instagram and TikTok are essentially funnels for OnlyFans these days.
Yeah.
They are basically
TikTok is very strict.
I don't care. Like, you can still post, like, you could be fully clothed and dancing. That is, you are a sex worker.
Yeah.
You are funneling, you're using it to funnel attention from men because of your sexuality. Yeah. Men aren't watching you to hear your opinions on the Israel-Palestine conflict. They're sitting there because your titties are out.
I'd argue they're listening to us when they talk about Palestine.
It reminds me of the Ukraine thing happened, and there was like all these like Ukrainian whores and porn stars. Easy. Remember?
I was calling them
out, and they would come out with like their bikinis and like just like the Ukrainian flag bikinis with the Ukrainian flag, and I'm like, go see who they are. One came to me, she had like 5 million followers and she was mad about her content. And she's like, you're siding with da-da-da. And I'm like, let me go see who this whore is. And I'm like, oh, there we go. Porn star, OnlyFans, whore, bye. And like, stop. You can't talk to me.
I'm not going to say they hate us because some of us love us.
The point I was originally making when I asked about college and stuff, right? So that's the gamble that a young woman has to make. She has to pick a good racehorse. Let's say you're in college and you're a young girl. If you decide to, you know, commit to a guy like that long term, you have to look at his potential and his ambition and his drive. Bingo. Because he doesn't have anything.
Bingo.
Right. You're both broke. Like you said, you're both poor, broke, you're students, whatever.
Yep.
But what is his potential? You have to be a very good assessment of, have a very good judge of, be a good judge of character and assess his potential as a long-term partner to attach yourself to a good racehorse, basically, to make that bet. Because otherwise, you could end up with a bum. So it is a gamble, right? Now, what's happening with most women nowadays is they're foregoing that risk. Because it is fundamentally a risk. They're forgoing that risk entirely, ignoring the young guys who are coming up and being like, you know what? I'm just going to get flown out to Dubai, or I'm just going to go on a yacht, and I'm going to go for the guy who's already successful. And then what happens is they're going to have to share that guy with every other young girl who's pretty and attractive that he's sliding in the DMs of.
Yeah.
That's where we're at.
Definitely a choice. Something else I'm very curious, and I'm sure I'm going to get some heat for this, but like, you know, going through your website when we were like, okay, what are we going to ask them? Let's like look at some of the services that you offer.
It's not the kind of website you guys are thinking about.
No.
It's a very wholesome
website, guys. No. But there is something that you offer,
I need to ask. Wholesome. I wouldn't necessarily call it wholesome. Yeah, but
I'm doing.
It's not the kind of content you're thinking. Yeah,
but I'm doing God. I'm doing God's work. I'm saving relationships.
Well, look. So there is a service that you offer about dicks, and you say that you can grow a penis.
Yeah,
and I'm extremely curious as to like, is
not
this
going to share industry secrets on this?
I mean, let's go fire
okay,
away.
But is this surgically? No, this is what I want to know. Is it a surgical procedure? Like, I need to know. Because
okay, so there is.
This is news to
one me. Of the things I talk about. So first of all, yes, it's possible, and I know that because I did it myself. As I was entering the industry, I literally was like, "How can I compete with these dudes who are like hogs?"
Okay,
and I'm like, "All right, well, I literally spent like a year diving into the different crevices of the internet trying to find every little bit of information I could and came out the other end with the tools of the trade and how to do it. And that's what I teach guys now as well.
So it's not surgically.
Not surgically, like, because what happens?
Right, I'm sorry, guys. Like,
you invited me on the show.
No, I'm in our comment section right now. God's work with the eggplant. I can't go on. So it's not surgically.
No, so one of the things that happens, one of the surgeries that guys, when guys go down that path, one of the first things they discover is a surgery that you can, it's so-called penis and enlargement surgery. It's complete bullshit. Because what happens is they sever, I'm going to get technical, they sever the ligaments that attach the penile shaft to the pubic bone, which causes the penis to basically, like, because half the male penis is basically inside of him.
Okay.
Right? So they sever these ligaments and it allows it to, like, kind of hang out lower. The problem is all that does is give him a, makes it look larger in the flaccid state. Right. It does not increase the length of the erect penis, so it basically does nothing.
Does it even pose more of a challenge now? Like, don't you have to pick up more weight when you're erect? I would think that
it wouldn't do that. But it basically doesn't do anything important. It's purely aesthetic, and it's only aesthetic in the locker room when you're around a bunch of other dudes anyway.
Yeah.
So it's totally pointless.
Which goes up to a good point, because somebody in the comments asked, do women even care about size? And it's
women care about size?
Okay.
I don't.
In my experience, there's a fundamental difference between the way that men talk about size and the way women talk about size. When men talk about size, they think of length. When women talk about size, they think of girth.
Okay.
Every girl I've ever met who's talked about a quote-unquote big penis, it's been a thick one that she's referring to in, like, one of my, you know, either me or another co-star that I've, you know, like another dude in the industry or whatever, it's always been the width, right? Dudes are always obsessed with this length of a thing because it's a visual, guys are more visual, but women are feeling that. The difference is that when a woman is experiencing a guy who's a bigger gentleman, who has a girthier thing, she's literally feeling that sensation of being stretched out and filled up, which is typically a very enjoyable one for a woman. Versus a guy who's like a pencil, but he's like 12 inches long. All he's doing is poking at her cervix all day and causing her pain. Fundamentally, very different experience.
See, with me, when it comes to size, like, I'd actually be more inclined to, like, not have sex with somebody that I feel like that could permanently change. That could permanently alter me. Like,
Angel's loving probably, this. Angel is loving this conversation.
I've never heard any girl or any of my girls say, I want a X, 8, 10, whatever size, you
I've
know.
Never heard that
I've never heard I've that. Never I've heard literally that. Only I've heard gay men. That's it. The only people around me that have this crazy obsession for large male private parts.
I'll tell you who does. LA size queens do.
Who?
LA size queen. See, well, I don't even know these
I don't
people.
Even know these it's people. Complete.
Annabella's like, well, Bella, you're married.
I'm not surprised. I am not surprised you don't know these women.
I don't know.
I'm not trying. I am married. I don't want to
know these.
I would never have altered my body. That's probably it. To me, it was always like the idea when you see like these exaggerated visions, like, oh, what's the name of this one movie with Mark Wahlberg where he's a porn star in the movie?
Oh,
The Gays.
He plays Dirk Diggler.
Dirk Diggler, yeah. What's the name of trying to see if somebody?
Oh, God damn it!
Shit, what's the name of that movie?
I know exactly.
I don't even know he's ever done that. At the end of the movie, it's Mark Wahlberg, which clearly it looks like a
poster. That's it, Boogie Nights. Thank you, chat.
I would hope it's a prosthetic. I don't know. Anyways, he unrolls this thing. He unrolls this thing from his pants, and looking at that, it's like, that's terrifying to me. Like, I would never. Yeah, no. I just, there's a size limit to this ride. And I'm like looking at that and it's like, whoa, count me out.
I've never seen this movie.
Fam, listen, I'm telling you, I look at something like that and it's like, not this girl right here. Boy. Like, you know the gif of the black lady, she's grabbing up her stuff and she's like, I'm leaving. Yeah. Like, that's literally me. Like, I'm calling time out and I'm like, I'm out, fam. Like, it's not gonna be me.
So one of the reasons that I actually decided to write this book you're talking about.
And
one of the reasons I decided to talk to, you know, teach guys that stuff. It's actually, this might sound weird, but it's more of like a metaphysical idea than anything else.
Okay.
Because most guys, if you tell them,
if you talk
to the average man, you tell him you can get a bigger dick. There's a way you can naturally increase the size of your penis. He's gonna look at you and be like, that's fucking bullshit. I don't believe you. Because he has a limiting belief about what's possible. Mm. Once you ingrain this idea into a man, because it is doable. But once you ingrain this idea into a man, oh, if that's possible, if I can change that about myself, what else is within my control? That's the idea I'm actually trying to get across to men, is that everything about you is within your goddamn control. Stop making excuses. You can change your body. You can change your mentality. You can change your finances. You can fix every problem you think you have. Stop making excuses and go get to work. That's ultimately the idea I want to get across to guys. And this is just one of the mediums that I use.
The outlets, the channel. Okay. That makes sense. Yeah, I'm sorry. It was just,
that was a good question.
Well, Vanessa's like, I'm skeptical. It sounds like a cash grab for insecure men. Well, to some degree, what he's selling is giving them the confidence they need in order to, listen, men are going to correlate the size of their penis and the size of their bank account.
I didn't give the guy the insecurity.
Correct. Presenting.
Who gave him the insecurity?
Well, technically, you might have done it in your first life.
Well, you might make that. You could
make that. It might have been watching porn.
But I think honestly, to answer that, I think who gives guys that insecurity? It's mainstream media.
Yeah.
Look, like, it's feminists. What's the first insult every feminist will throw at a guy if she disagrees with him?
Every single time.
Little dick energy.
Every single time.
There is little dick energy out there.
See, you're doing it. You're even doing it. So I ain't, like, to whoever made that comment, I ain't creating the insecurity. It's women who create the insecurity in the first place because they use it as a weapon against men. I don't use it as a weapon against dudes. I'm trying to help guys. Women are the ones who will deliberately use that as a weapon, a little jab at a dude. Oh, you got a tiny penis anyway. They'll throw that at guys all the time. And media, music videos, everything. Like, all this stuff does it all the time.
I want to piss off your enemy. What are you saying?
Bingo.
Yeah, that's true.
See? Don't turn around and blame me.
The comments in the chat are just like, they have me dying right now. Good. God will not give you more than you can handle.
Your audience sounds amazing.
You know, to be honest, most women will tell you that they're satisfied with an average guy that, you know, satisfies them.
This is like out of our normal territory, but I think it also has a lot to do with the kind of things that you're into, right? Mm-hmm. Because if you like sex that's a little out of the ordinary, maybe a little rougher, a little, like, if you've got a mandingo, that's gonna potentially hurt you more.
Mandingo. You
said mandingo? No. Is it not? I'm thinking, like, there's certain things that maybe you wouldn't be as, maybe you wouldn't be as excited to try certain things if you feel like you could potentially hurt yourself in the process.
Yeah, that's true.
There's certain sex positions and sex acts that are basically restricted to a guy if he doesn't have a penis that is a certain length.
Yeah.
Right. So one of the other things I do, and actually, that is only literally one quarter of the entire book that I talk about. Like,
so you guys know if anybody has trouble.
But one of the main things I teach guys is how to use it properly. That's fundamentally a lot more useful and important in pleasing their partner. Is knowing, because
the whole act, right?
Yeah,
like, it's not just
a man should actually know a woman's body better than she knows her own body. Act. To be a good lover, you have to know a woman's body inside and out, because you know you can do a lot more things to her than she can do to herself. You have different angles, different angles of approach, different mentality. You can whisper things in her ear. You can do all this different stuff. But if you're a guy who fundamentally understands a woman's body inside and out, it's a superpower. Because you can give her an experience she's never had before.
And that goes far beyond just the size of a penis.
Totally different.
We're talking about
That's how you make an amazing sexual experience. Yeah.
Somebody said, how many inches exactly can Sterling get me?
Can it add up? No, but look, to be fair, there is a doctor. I did not know about this until, because I saw the ad. There was like a billboard one time. I think I was driving through Doral. There's a doctor, I guess he's a scammer, that he's trying to tell guys that he can enlarge their penis.
So there's a couple of different, that surgery I initially talked about, the one where you cut the ligaments. There's also another one, I believe, where they insert like some kind of plastic graft.
Oh my god!
Into what your onto hell? Your shaft to try and like extend it and stretch it and stuff like that. But I'm just like, I'm personally like, why would you do that when you could do it? Right. You could do it like naturally and just like have like no
better, right?
You know, and there's a discipline aspect to it, and there's the mental, like I said, there's the mental aspect to it of understanding that you can fundamentally change your body. It's the equivalent, like that would be the equivalent of like going to one of these surgeons who gives you fake abs or fake biceps, you know, right. Like injects your biceps right. with like a gel.
Abs are so ridiculous.
It looks ridiculous. And it's also ridiculous. Like, you know, you didn't earn that. Yeah. You know, you didn't put the effort in yeah. to get that result. So why would you feel pride about it?
You know,
you're going to feel insecure about it more than you think.
You know what's crazy?
Absolutely, I would think so.
In Colombia, it's a very vain culture. Like the Colombian women and men are very into their looks, you know, both naturally and of course, like, you know, fake
with,
stuff,
with surgery.
Right, with surgery as well. But there are so many of these women that already have a natural banging body. Like they got the abs, but they're so vain and so like, I guess, mentally fucked up that then they go ahead and get the additional surgery right. to get more abs, more ass. And it's like, you already had it. Like you already yeah, had the abs and you already had the ass, but then you went ahead and got it extra sculpting because you're fucking...
I mean, you don't think that to some degree with the same way that he's explaining with that surgery, that it all stems from a certain level of insecurity where you feel like I would feel better about myself, XYZ. I mean, I know women in Colombia.
Yeah,
I know a girl specifically that up. Outside of the normal surgery, she got her kneecaps done because she didn't like the way that her kneecaps what? Looked. So she did a surgery for her kneecap. And she also did a surgery for her mm-hmm. hairline because she didn't like the way that her hairline
looked. I think Kim did that too. The hairline. Kneecaps.
She got did laser. So she could
so
get
you have no, like, none of these hairs.
That's like a certain degree
exactly.
of
okay.
self. Exactly. I guess you have to be like, there's a certain level of self criticizing that you're doing there where you're like, oh, I need to completely alter my kneecaps.
I mean, yeah. I call this the Kardashianification of women because this didn't exist before Kim Kardashian.
Yeah, it did.
Not to the degree that you see it now.
In Colombia, it's always
this
been
level of
15
like,
years old.
Yes,
you turn
yes,
15 years old, yeah. you get your boobs done.
I promise
but
you.
This idea of like, it's a sexual arms race is what it is. It's women competing with other women.
No.
To try,
know that.
To try and
yeah,
like, oh,
that.
My butt, her
but
butt's better than me.
Is it not the same
me,
with men?
I get a wider butt.
Is it not the same with men,
but men do it in different ways. Men do it financially, through status, through network and influence. More
but
so
I'm thinking if there's a dude out there and he's getting, for example, calf implants that I know are popular, is he really thinking that women are going to be more attracted to him because he's got these calf implants, or is he trying to keep up with the Joneses at the gym with the buddy that's working out?
I mean, I just go to the gym more, bro. Like,
yeah,
why
I mean,
are you getting calf implants? just squat and calf raises, man. Stop being lazy. Yeah. Like, because you can get that. Like, I don't understand why you would get surgery for something like that for something you could just do.
Somebody goes, you'll what implants? Surprised. Calf, like the back of your leg. Like men do this a lot. Actually, it's for men who have chicken legs. They go out and then they feel like they can't work them out enough.
Just don't skip leg day.
Listen, it's surgery. It's everywhere. And I mean, I do agree that Kim Kardashian has definitely amplified that into mainstream. But for example, growing up in Colombia, I'm sure you saw
I saw
all
it.
Of my Colombian friends, yeah. all of them,
and
without
this was
exception,
before the internet.
Had some kind of surgery yeah. before right. they were even 18.
Do either of you have any plastic surgery?
I do not.
You do?
My boobs.
The next thing I was going to say was no Latinas have tits. They're all flat chested because every Latina I've ever met in Miami or ever seen in Miami all have fake titties. They've got amazing natural butts. Amazing butts, but they've not. Angels agree. He's kind of agreeing. They're all fake titties.
Yeah, but I think it goes more. But I think that what you're talking about is actually more of the Miami aesthetic. They get the titties because they want to be able to compete. In my early 20s, a long ass time ago, I used to work at mm-hmm. Hooters, and that was like the main thing that girls did. And it wasn't because they didn't necessarily have; it's because
tips.
Fake tits got you more tips. You were gonna be more attractive, and it wasn't just big boobs; it was big fake boobs that would do it. So I think that a
For
lot
Hooters,
of it has
I
to
mean,
do
I
not
could,
so, so
yeah.
much not because they don't have boobs, but because there is a certain Miami aesthetic that exists. Right, like when you don't have surgery, you're actually out of the norm of women here in Miami.
Now, see, for me, it wasn't, you know, Kim Kardashian didn't even exist when I first got my boobs. I wanted to get my boobs done since I was like 15 years old, and it was more like a cultural norm
wow.
in Colombia. It's like a cultural thing, you know. It's like you grow up.
You turn 16, you get your
boob done. And yes, absolutely. Yes, absolutely.
That's exactly what the cultural norm is.
You know, Instagram wasn't around. Facebook wasn't around.
That's amazing. I didn't know that.
And, you know, BBLs were a thing before they even got here. So the same thing, you know, how everyone's like getting their teeth done. I mean, they've been doing that for years. So they, when it comes to like certain looks or what do you call it? Like vein plastic surgery, they've been doing this for years.
But it's a cultural thing. So it's thing, a I would cultural, say, 'cause it was a Colombian.
Yeah.
Thing.
So it was never like to compete in the Miami market. I was too young to even care about that. Right. But it was more of like, oh, like I saw, you know, my mom do it and my aunt. And, you know, it was like, well, you already have a really good body, but if you got your boobs done, then you would have a much better body. And I was like, right. Yes.
Yeah.
My problem with it is like, I just want to know what my kids would look like if I impregnate you.
Yeah.
Like how much surgery exactly do you have?
If your butt's fake, your ass is your butt's fake, your tits are fake, your waist is fake, your eye, like your forehead's fake, your hair's fake, your kneecaps are now fake. Like, what are my kids going to look like? Are they going to be mongoloids? What's going to happen? Like, I don't have a clue what they're going to look like. You know, there was a Chinese guy who sued his wife.
I saw that.
She had so much plastic surgery, his kids came out ugly. He was like, what?
He sued her.
I agree with that. He should sue her.
Can you imagine?
It's a complete lie.
Que los niños le salieron chinito facing down and she had surgery to open up her eyes. And he's like, those kids are ugly. That's not what your problem is. That's the bait and switch. Annabella wants you to know.
It is a bait and switch.
Annabella wants you to know that you're a liar because she's a 38 triple D naturally.
Oh, because she's Latina. So I'm Latina girl in the comments. She's like, I'm a 38.
Like, lies.
Yeah. You're the exception to the rule, my dear.
All right, guys, we're going to take a couple more questions and then
we've been going on for a while. Yeah.
Yeah,
2 hours.
Somebody said, nice. I would sue too. Absolutely. We're going to sue too. What else we got here, guys?
Yeah, Colombians are very, 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 very vain. I was when I spent a month there in December and I signed up for a gym like immediately. And I was like, you go to the gym and everyone is fit. You know how you go to the gym here and you're like, okay, there's like hot girls and like fit guys. And like, you know, you got your chubby people trying to get in shape and normal people. Over there, it's like everyone is fucking perfect. And you're like the cougars, the young ones, the old ones, like everyone. Like you.
I mean, that's not a bad thing.
No, it's not.
How many beauty queen crowns does Colombia have?
A bunch. Wait, I was sending her pictures. She's like, how did you find all these? I'm like, look at my gym. Look at all the hot bitches on my gym. And she's like, how'd you find them? I'm like, because I went and stalked them on their Instagram.
She's sending me pictures of all these people. She's like, this woman was at my gym. It's like, how did you even find her? She's like, they check into the gym. So I went and I stalked them.
Yeah, I was like stalking them. And I was like, damn, like the cougars are there like just 2 hours. I'd come in and they were there for 2 hours. I'm like, holy shit. Like they're still here. Yeah. I mean, I guess it's better. I think
it goes back to the argument about, you know, women get them down here to keep up with the lifestyle here in Miami. Yes. It's no different in Colombia. Yes. You get them done in Colombia because that is the normal lifestyle. Like everyone gets it done.
I think that the average American woman, like non-Latina American woman, would benefit significantly from having that kind of attitude.
For sure.
Hitting the gym all the time and losing 100%. Because American women are fat.
Yep.
On average.
Yep.
Fat. Relative to everywhere else in the world. And
food, it's in everything.
It's in everything.
But I mean, are men really different? Are unfortunately, men really that different?
Same thing. They also need to hit the goddamn gym.
Yeah.
They also do.
I mean, but it has a lot to do too. And, you know, great time, you guys. Remember what you're drinking and what you're eating and what you're putting into your body. Like, there's a lot of processed foods that are legal here in America that aren't legal anywhere else in the world.
Yeah. Well, you know,
be choosy about what you put into your body.
To me,
Century H2O in Dominican rum.
The last thing I'll say is that I had two culture shocks. So before we moved here, one of our first vacations here was to go to Disney. And it was our first time it wasn't my first time in the USA, but it was our first time in Disney. When you go to Disney, you notice that everyone is extremely large, like 300 pounds, eating turkey legs and all this food. And here we come. My aunts are like perfect. My mom's perfect. And we're like younger and like healthy kids. And we look around and it's like the family of five like this. Like you don't see those people in Colombia. Like it's really rare if you see like an overly obese person. And I was like, what the hell is it? Same thing as the first time I went to Texas. The first time I went to Texas, I was like, holy shit. Like I went to a Walmart and I was like, everyone here is morbidly obese, yeah. right? And then the other thing is, like, once we moved here, my mom marries into a Cuban-American family. Cuban-Americans are a beautiful race. You know, they have a lot of Europeans, so they come out, like, with the light eyes and, like, you know, whatever. And but the girls are beautiful, and then they get married, and then they are just let go. So,
oh yeah, like so, once a Latina hits 30, typically. Right.
So no, but not Venezuelans and not Colombians. So my mom was like, you know, watching her husband's, what is it, cousins? They were beautiful athletes when they were in high school and college. Then they get married, and it's just like,
womp.
And they don't give a shit.
Somebody
that doesn't happen in our home country, because the women give birth and then they immediately get back in shape and they're like hottest, and they have to get surgery. They're going to get surgery. They're going to lipo, whatever it is. They're going to get back.
And the husbands will pay for the surgery.
Oh, yeah.
The husbands will absolutely invest into those. Somebody wrote, they better get to work. Otherwise, the trans men are going to win the awards. I hate y'all. And it's the truth. Sterling, thank you so much coming on the show and staying with us as long as you did and answering all of our questions.
It was an absolute pleasure. I loved it. I loved every second of it.
Yeah, thanks again for coming. And thank you guys for tuning in and staying with us. I know it was something a little out of the ordinary for us, but we will see you guys again next week. And don't forget to like, share, subscribe, turn on notifications, guys. Remember, no Illuminati. No lizard people, just us funding the show. And don't forget to check out our sponsors, Sentry H2O at sentryh2o.com, and use code MPL10.
Bye, guys.